Wednesday the 14th of October, Kof Zion, Kof Vol Tishrei, Rabbi Yehoshua Frickers, Corporate Law, Dino Demalkerson.
Good morning to everyone. I'd like to begin by first thanking the organisers of this unique and valuable project, the Torah Way, and also obviously for all the participants come here this morning. After recently having learnt Hilchos Shutrin, the laws of partnerships, I decided to see how the secular law compares with that of the halacha. How does it comply with the halacha? And I came to the realization that perhaps the vast body of law and practice known as corporate law may have no halachic basis. Now, as the title indicates, corporate law, Dina de Malchusa, and I should add in Minhag, there is the understanding that Dina de Malchusa is something which allows the authorities the right and the power to enforce any laws outside the realm of halacha. And it's that topic which I would like to discuss today, the extents, limitations, and the application of Dina de Malchusa. Now, by corporate law, obviously, I am no expert in secular law. But the general principle is one which is well known and has been in wide use for a couple of hundred years. And that is the principle of limited liability, whereby a person can set up a company and absolve himself of any direct responsibility. The creditors can only claim from assets held in the name of the company, and the partners in this joint stock company, shareholders, will only lose their share, the money that they have put in the way of shares. Now, obviously thinking about it, it is something which, apart from halacha, is difficult to understand. If one borrows money, it's an obvious concept that one has to pay, one is responsible. According to halacha, one is responsible to pay for anything one has owned, one does own, one will own. So how does this work? How does this comply with halacha? Now, there is a fundamental principle which we have to understand. And that is that the way this is set up, the way it works, is that a person, like we said, he sets up a company, and he does so by creating an entity, the company, totally independent from the owners. That's what it's called, an independent legal personality, and is totally separate from the owners, and therefore the creditors can have no claim from the properties owned by the owners. It's called, perhaps I've seen the term, a legal fiction. And this is the underlying mechanism which allows the people to absolve themselves from any responsibility. So the question is, have we got any basis for such a concept in halacha? And if we don't, is there any way, like we have mentioned, in the form of Din de Malchusa, or perhaps in the form of Minhag in the local custom, that means the law of the land or the local custom, is there anything which can enforce and support this form of business? So we have two goals today. One is the general goal of understanding the limits, the parameters of Dina de Malchusa Dina, the concept of one has to follow the law of the land and that it is binding on us, and also the idea of Minhag, Minhag HaMokoim, one has to follow the customs of the place. And there's a specific goal in its application to our Shaila of corporate law. Now, I'd just like to make a disclaimer that when discussing Dina de Malchusa Dina, it's obviously a very intricate topic, and it's quite a lot of grey areas. So I'm going to be trying to explore the general ideas of it, and for any specific shayla, one obviously has to be ma'ayan and consult the competent authorities. So now we're going to start trying to go through the sugyas, the makayras of Dina de Malchusa, starting with Dina de Malchusa Dina. So the first shayla which we're going to discuss is the svaras of Dina de Malchusa Dina. In other words, why is it binding on us? We know we have the Shulchan Aruch, we have the Torah, we have the halachas. What is the svara? What is the logic that binds us to Dina de Malchusa Dina, the law of the land? So firstly is the Rashbam in Baba Basra from Daf Nun Dalet. He learns that it's the form of Haskomas HaMedina. This is something which is generally accepted conduct that binds the person. Now that sounds very similar to the concept of minag ha-mokom, which we'll discuss, we'll come to later. And the second quite well known svara, which is the Ran in the Dorim, and his svara is the dina v'chus dina is because yesh b'koychoi legarish ma'artzoi. He has the power to banish anyone from his land, so therefore he's entitled to do what he wants there. Now, this does not mean that he's advocating the idea of might is right. As the Ran himself continues to say that in Eretz Yisrael, so famously, where Eretz Yisrael belongs to the Klal Yisrael themselves, the Yud Beis Shvatim, the Melech has therefore no right to banish anyone from the land, therefore there's no din of the Malchus Sedina. It's quite the opposite, saying the Melech has the right to banish the people from his land. As we know, it has been for many years to medieval times, the idea that the king owns the land, and people had to pay for the land, so therefore he's entitled to ask what he wants from people who want to remain in his land. It's like someone owns a house, they're entitled to ask whoever enters to follow his laws. That is the svara of the Ran. Now, there's two implications from this. Firstly, the din v'chus din should be limited to laws deriving from the bailus and the karka, from the ownership of the land. Since that is the, it is built on this idea that he owns the land, so there should only be, it should be limited to things deriving from that. The second implication is one that regarding today's world, where the land, we too recognize the idea of private ownership. People own the land, and the government are more of a representative body. So, according to the Ran, to what extent how do we apply Dina de Malchus Adina? So hopefully we'll come to explain these things. Now to turn to the second question which we'd like to understand, and that is the extent of Dina de Malchus Adina. How much authority does the Malchus have, does the king have, in enforcing his laws? So there's a Mishnah in Gittin, which says that kol hashtoris ha'olim ha'akoy shal oivdi kechovim, any shtar, any contract which is made in a secular court, afish kechisveim oivdi kechovim kshirim, even though those signing are goyim, non-Jewish, the shtoris ha'kosha, chutz migitei noshim shichurei avodim, apart from gitei noshim, documents of divorce, and shichurei avodim, freeing slaves. So the Gemara asks, as mashma in the Mishnah, when we discussed, we say the shtoris, documents, contracts made in secular courts are kosher, the Mishnah does not differentiate between a shtar raya, that means a shtar, a document used as a method of proof, and a shtar kinyan, meaning, according to the Din Torah, karka is nikna with shtoris. One of the ways is, kesef shtar chazak is three ways. One of them is one writes a shtar contract, and that makes the kinyan. That transfers the ownership from A to B. So the Gemara's Medayik, that it's mashmal in both cases, both types of shtaras, they would be kosher. So the Gemara says that we understand that when it's a shtar raya, shtar for proof, that we could understand, because since it's made secular court, they're worried, they have a reputation, they have to be honest. So therefore, there is a raya. All we're interested in is a proof, so we can rely on the integrity of the secular courts. However, when it comes to kinyan, we're trying to make a kinyan, make a chalos kinyan, so there, it can only work if it's a shtar. If the Torah says it's made by, signed by goyim, made by goyim, it's not a kosher shtar, so then it shouldn't work. So the Gemara answers, Shmuel says, Dina de Malchus Adina. Dina de Malchus Adina. That's what gives this shtar its power and its validity. The Ibai is saying, more, says another Torah, Tani Chutz Migitei Noshim. When the Mishnah excludes Gitei Noshim from this halacha, it means anything similar. In other words, anything which creates some transfer of ownership or a divorce, something which has to act as a way of transferring, of doing something, is possible. So now the Rishonim are medayik from here, there seems to be a big machloikas, a big machloikas, as to the power of Din Malchus Adina. If we say Din Malchus Adina, see the first teretz of Shmuel, that applies even to shtar kinyan. So therefore we see it has very general, very broad authority. Whereas according to the second teretz of the Gemara, that shtar kinyan, it doesn't work, Rav Shmuel Medayik, Din Mafusikin is only limited to things involving levying taxes, like Misim Arnoinos. That is the extent of Dina de Malchus Adina. And like we said, that was the implication of the Ran. He owns the land, he's allowed to levy taxes, to live there. However, the Ramah Paskins, the Rishonim take on, Ramah Paskins, Shin Samach Tes, Yivches, Paskins are the first Heretz, that any law that he enacts is Chal. But he says, it has to be the Takonas B'nei HaMedina. And the definition of this is something which we'd also like to discuss today. Now, the Mashmos, like we said, is that there's still quite broad authority to the Din of Din of Malchus Adina. However, the Rav Shbor in Shuvas, he asks the Shaila, that if we know in Din Torah that a husband inherits, if his wife passes away, the husband first rights inherits his wife. Everything. He's the first Yerush. Achleik is the rights of the Rabbanon, that's the Halacha. Now what happens if someone gets married in a place where the Din of Malchus, the Minag is that it's not the husband to the Yerushans, it's for example it's her children, do we have to follow Din of Malchus Adina? So now the Rav Shbor says that no. Din of Malchus Adina only applies to laws enacted by the king for his benefit, or for Hanhogas Mishpatei Malchus, he says, one could loosely translate it as law and laws to keep law and order, things to keep law and order in the country. But laws which are enacted by the courts, things which don't really have any difference to the king, no interest to the king, in those things there is no halacha of dina d'machus adina. And he adds in the svar, why? Or the proof? Because if not, we can scrap Chasron Mul Shulchan Aruch. Let's learn the law books of the land, and that those are the laws that we should follow. Therefore, Rav Shmuel says it's clear that Din of Chasidim is limited only to things, to laws enacted by the king, which are in his interest, or the interest of the country, law and order. The question is, according to the Rav Shmuel, also nowadays where it is the government which legislates, the courts are there to uphold the laws made by the government. So would the Rav Shmuel say that there we should follow the halachas of the land, Din Malchus Adina is chal on everything, since it is the government? Rav Shmuel was talking in a time when it was the king who made his taxes and things that we said involving law and order for his benefit, should be anarchy. But perhaps when it comes nowadays when it is the government enacting all the laws, it's all one thing, so therefore perhaps Din should apply. So there the Sma says, in Daikin the Rav Shmuel, that no, even in a case when the king specifically gives a directive, one should follow this halacha that the courts have made, there's no din of din, there's not chal din of the Malchusa. So we have to still explain though the extent Takonas Bnei HaMedina. In other words, we said that Takonas Bnei HaMedina and Hogan's Mishpatei Malchus, things raise law and order, things to make some sort of society conform to common law, so the interest of the king shouldn't be Hefka, so there is Din of the Malchus Adina. So it's something we have to clarify as regards to our Shaila of corporate law. Before we get to that, let's summarize. We've seen three categories in which we've seen different shittas whether and where applied Din Malchus Adina. As regards to taxes, things for his treasury of the king, which he has hanah for directly, so that everyone agrees there is a Din of Din Malchus Adina. Things which are outside of that, I mean, things not going to his treasury, which aren't for his personal benefit, that we said is the machlekes toyev, depends on the machlekes in Gemara and Gittin, the two tirutzim, where the shtar kinyan there's a halacha din of Akhsadina, and we paskin that it does apply there. And there's all other laws involving all other financial arrangements where melech is not involved, and that seems to be it does not apply. And we've also seen that the svar of the Ran applies to only Svara is the basis of Muktzah is based on the fact that he can banish anyone from his land. That's something we'll have to also see how that will work out for us in our Shaila of corporate law. And to go back to this idea of Takanas B'nai Medina, what is included in that? Obviously when it comes to the Ramah, he brings an example of Takanas B'nai Medina involving a halacha of, we know that, of involving mashkoinis, involving loans. The king has the right to enforce certain law of loans. So when it comes to corporate law, what one has to know, is that something which can be considered Takanas B'nai Medina? Not everyone would agree it's a good idea. Perhaps it's only there to benefit a few people who said it's the good of the whole land. So it depends on this issue. Now, over and above these issues, there's a problem that Shach says in Simon Ayin Gimel that a din of the Malchus Adina does not apply, is not valid when it goes against a din Torah. So in our case of corporate law, we have to understand that does it go against din Torah? Is there any such concept that we mentioned, creating this entity which is totally separate from the owners, has a life of its own? Is there such an arrangement in the Torah? These are things which we'll have to see din Malchus Adina. Will it be able to help us? And it seems that if it doesn't go according to, if it goes against the laws of the Torah, it seems that it should not apply. However, there's another concept which we'd like to explore, Minag HaMokim. That we see many places in the Shas, starting in Baba Basra. At the beginning of Baba Basra, we find the concept as a chiyuv. One has to build a wall in between courtyards. One neighbor shouldn't disturb another. So there the Mishnah says if what type of wall you have to build. So the Gemara says, look, the Mishnah says, Minag HaMokim, look at Minag HaMokim. So that is poshut Minag HaMokim there. It's not going against the Torah. The din of Torah is a general. You have to build a wall. So now the Minag just comes to us to define the details, what type of wall to build. That's poshut the halach of Dina de Malchus Adina. And that we find in the Shas, many examples of that. There's another musig of Minag HaMokim, which works something like, we know the halacha that a person can make a tanai shebemomoin. In other words, one can master mashkos of a Torah. A person cannot make a condition in any deal which contravenes the din of the Torah. However, if it's in a financial matter, then it does work. Why? Because since in monetary matters, people can make in between them agreements to be moiful, to forgive. People can make themselves chayiv things that they're not chayiv. So a person can make a tanai. It works like a mechila. So we find this musig also in the idea of minag hamokum. For example, if there's a halacha of the hours that a poel has to work. Someone hires a worker. What time does he have to start in the morning? What time does he have to finish in the evening? So the Gemara brings psukim, indicating the times. He has to get up, nets, and he has to go home when it's dark, by tisak rechovim. There are parameters mentioned in the Torah. But the Gemara said that where there is a minag hamokum, we follow the minag hamokum. So it's like, why? Because there, the idea is that when people make deals between them, they're making it, the deal, al das, with in mind, the local custom. It's like they can make it tonight, they're moichel each other. Since that is local custom, we go into the contract, we go into this deal with this understanding. So there is also another idea of minag hamokum that we find. Now there's a third type of minag, which is also Gemara in Baba Basra, where there we find a community have a power to enforce fines, levy fines, and to make different takonas. Like there's a famous takonas Shkutei Chutz, which Kehillas just had and Antwerp still has. The meat sold, at least raw meat, may not enter, you may not bring into the community, you have to buy locally, and if not, there's fines. So how does that work? The Rishonim explain, either it's because there's a concept that a public body, community, have a power of Beis Din. And Beis Din can enforce what they want. It's halach of Hefka, Beis Din, Hefka. Or there's a Svara Rishonim say that when people get into a deal together, since each one's relying on the integrity of the other, so therefore it's called their Goyim Edas and Makne. It means that they willingly are submitting themselves and deciding to follow the local customs. So maybe perhaps this third idea of minag can help us. Why? If there's a minag of the land, So, like we find that it works like a mechila, or like hefka based on hefka, so maybe it can contravene the din of the Torah, it can go neged dinei Torah. When it comes to din of Malchus Adina, there's nothing which can really enforce the din of Malchus Adina apart from halacha, apart from the fact that it's the authority of the king. The authority of the king can be limited, and it does not work when it contravenes the Torah. And the svara is because Chas v'Shalom, the din of Malchus Da'ara, the earthly kings can go neged the din of the Ribono Shel Olam Malchus D'Rakia. When it comes to minag, where we have an understanding that it can be held within the parameters of the Torah, as in when we make a Tanai V'Dovah Shabbamomoin, like we said, there's a head svara, the community has the power of hefka based on hefka. So perhaps there would work also neged the din Torah, in the absence of any din Torah. However, in the Rishonim it is clear, and Chasam Soif and Shavuot Mdalet says clearly that, no, even when it comes to the idea of minag, local customs, they have to conform, they have to be based at least on a concept found in the Torah. You cannot come up with something which contravenes, it's got absolutely no basis in the Torah. So what makes it Tanai? It's a local matter, but to institutionalize a change, a new idea, there has to be some sort of basis for it in the Torah. So, I thought perhaps we could find a smach for this idea. So what we're looking for is some sort of basis for this idea where one can, the ownership of something does not start with an individual bailus. Normally, each individual buys something and they get a right in an item and then they can share it to make a partnership, make a shutfus. Here we see something the other way around. There's a type of communal ownership. And it's based on that ownership that people have a right to it. So we have three such examples in the Torah. We have the concept of mom and call. A sefer Torah, who owns a sefer Torah? Someone donates a sefer Torah to a kehillah. Who owns it? So is it owned by the call? Is it owned by the individuals? So we find machlokes mabit mog navrom, if a kehillah shalom has to disband, who owns the sefer kodesh, all the money of the kehillah? So the Mabit says that it goes to people who can benefit from it. People are Bar Chiyuva, people are 13, Bar Mitzvah, men. Only those people, they have the rights to the Sforim Sifrei Torah. However, the Mogen Avraham says, no, it works like regular Dinei Yerusha. And it goes, say someone was Nifta, it goes to his daughter, he has a share in the Sifrei Torah, and then she has no Shaykhs to Sifrei Torah, the benefit from the Sforim, the Gemaras, she doesn't learn. Still, it works like regular Dinei Yerusha.
Now these members of the shul?
Yes. They were initially members of the shul, and it goes, Machlokes says, does it go like regular Yerusha inheritance, that goes to all their inheritors, even if they have no connection to the Gemara, it goes even to the girls, to the daughters, or the Mabit says it goes only to people who have benefit from it. In other words, the Mabit does not look at it as being a literal momin belonging to every individual. It belongs to the tzibur as a klal, as an entity, and only people that benefit from it have a right to this entity. Even though the Gemara says in the Dorim that if someone's madi hanor, someone can ask to make a neda, and ask another member of the kehillah to benefit from their part of the kehillah, so he has a seat in the shul, he can ask for his seat in the shul to anyone else. So we see he does own it, but this ownership is based on the communal ownership. And his ownership derives from the communal ownership, as opposed to normally, where we have to start with an individual private ownership and build on that. Here we see, according to the Mabit, this concept they can go the other way around. Now there's another idea, we have Momen Aniyah, Momen Stoker. Who owns the Momen of Sadoka? When Choyo, what happens is, once it's inside Sadoka, it belongs to all the Aniyim. He has the right to choose who to give it to, but it belongs to all the poor people. However, there's Machlekes, Rosh and Rashba, if one is allowed to lend money of Aniyah, money of Stoker in Ribis Ketusa, that means Ribis Deraisa, we know we're not allowed to charge interest for loans, by money which belongs to Yesoimim, one is allowed to charge Ribis Derabonon, but Ribis Deraisa is also. Machlekes is, by Momon Aniyim, are we allowed to charge Ribis Deraisa? So, this is Din by Hekdesh, real Hekdesh, in other words, Bedek Abayis, Hekdesh, so much based on Mikdosh, It's mutter to lend with ribis. Why? More dashens. Only achicha is only man which belongs to your brother is also to lend ribis. Hegdish does not belong to your brother. Doesn't belong. There's no ownership. No ownership. Physical belongs to an individual. So therefore, it's mutter to lend it by ribis, even ribis deraisa. So Rashba says that so too in mamon avaniim, it's mutter to lend. Rashba says mamon aniim is achicha. It belongs to the aniim. Of course, it's also to lend with ribis ketsutza. According to Rashba, we see that he says it's mutter to lend, Rubis Ksusa. So Rashba, he learns more on him. There's no, we can't define any individual ownership here to consider it Momon Achicha, belonging to your brother. Momon Aniyim is a communal, is an entity which is above the Momon, the Aniyim themselves. It's like we said, it's like the Momon Kol, this entity which exists for itself, and people have a right to it if they're part of that Tzibur. And the third example, which I want to compare it to, is by Matnas Kuhuna. It means Truma, Maisa, Matnas Levia, Yivta Leviim. So when someone's Mafrish Truma, immediately belongs to the Shevet. The Tosa says that even if it's bottle, when Truma's bottle, still one has to, it falls into, he has some fruits of Truma, it falls into his fruits of Chulin. So when it's bottle, he still has to take out the moment, the truma, the amount of truma, even though he's allowed to eat it, there's no issa, it's bottle beroiv, but he still has to give it. Why? Because moment shevet, gezel, roiv doesn't help. Gezel is gezel. Definitely, as soon as you mafresh it, belongs to the kohenim or the levim. However, there's machloikas, Rashi and Tosfos and Gittin. When I mafresh truma and I give it to the kohen, is it automatically his, or does he have to do a ma'isa kinyan? One should say it's automatically his. Why does he need to do ma'isa kinyan? When I mafresh truma, the truma belongs to the whole shevet, and I can decide who to give it to, but it already belongs to the kohen. I might have toyos ano, I might have the right to decide who to give it to, but when I choose my kohen, it was already his. The glory, that was his. However, Rashi is mashma, no, he needs to do a kinyan. So from this we can infer that Rashi holds that the definition of Manas Kuhuna also follows along these lines. The other two examples. In other words, Yimafresh Truma belongs to the entity of the common entity of the Kohanim or the Leviim. And it's not built on the individual rights, the individual ownerships of the Kohanim. So therefore he has to do a kinyan to make it his individual fruit. So from these three things, perhaps we can see these as a smach for this concept that we said in corporate law, where one creates people grouped together, then can create a concept, an entity which is, you can call a meta company, something which is independent of them, in essence, and thereby they limit their liability. The company exists for itself, and they have no liabilities apart from, obviously, like we said, the assets. Now obviously all these things are only a smach, they're not directly exactly the same, because we know by Momen Aniyim, it's called Momen She'enai Toivim. In other words, if someone steals any of these things, either Truma or steals Moy Sadaka, there's no individual who can come and claim it.
Ribis
by Momen Aniyim.
No.
Oh, so I'm saying, obviously it's not exactly the concept, it's not exactly the same, but smach we find, in other words, this concept that the rights are not built on the individual. Normally, ownership is built on the individual, being coin or something, and then they group together. Here we see this concept that the ownership doesn't start with their private ownership. You don't have to first own this thing and then everyone gets together. You can create an entity, a common entity. We're going to say there's also a difference. A company can be sued, it can sue, even though it's an entity for itself. By Momen Aniyim, you can't sue, there's no one to sue. Someone, and if someone steals Momen Aniyim, there's no one to come and claim it. Have a company for sure. A company has claims and one can claim against the company. So there are differences. As in the company? Well, the question is, Moshe, if they have obligations, so why doesn't, when it comes to loans, why does it not extend to their, if it's an obligation on them, they should have a responsibility to fulfill their loans.
They've got no mitzvahs,
they've got no such a company. No, so, no. But so, them as direct, I'm saying, you're asking why are they responsible?
No, they should be
should be able to take him ribbis because there's no avera on the company to take it.
So here we find, I mean, that we, they definitely have responsibilities, as in, once they're lending money which they're benefiting from, well, they have a bailus, I mean, there's no one's going to deny, they own it. By mom and kohol, they too own it. It's theirs, definitely a chicha. But the concept we're trying to say is that you can have you start with an entity which is separate, so to speak, from the owners, in a certain extent. So perhaps these things are smach, even though obviously there are differences, but when it comes to the idea of minag, we have to at least have some sort of basis in halacha. And from that maybe we can build and rely on minhagim, or rely on dina d'machas sadina, and has authority. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.